Okay, thank you all very much for coming. I'm Michael Green, Senior Advisor and Japan Chair here at CSIS, and we today are going to look at the post-Koizumi era, legacy and new leadership. I was in Japan a week ago, and Prime Minister Koizumi was giving a speech, and he said, post-Koizumi, post-Koizumi. Everybody is saying post-Koizumi. And then in Japanese, he said, Yubinkoku janai desu yo. I'm not a post office. And then he turned to Prime Minister Mori and he said, it's not such a great job. Who would want this job? And Mori hesitated for a second, then he nodded in agreement. But everybody on this panel and everyone in this room is curious about who would want this job. We thought it's not too soon to be looking at the post-Koizumi era. We're not trying to proclaim in any way lame duck status on Prime Minister Koizumi. From his speech a week ago, it's clear that he's going to be working at full speed through September. But with his visit to Washington less than 1 month away, and the LDP presidential election a little bit less than 4 months away, we thought this would be good timing to gather some experts together and think through a little bit about the legacy of Prime Minister Koizumi, and to think about what we can expect from his possible successors. Legacy that the Prime Minister can point to is not completely consolidated, but I think most historians will probably say that he brought the U.S.-Japan alliance to its strongest and highest level ever, that he brought Japan's global position to one of its highest levels ever, that he reformed the postal systems, highways, and helped to put on track an economic recovery from the so-called lost decade, but left some homework for his successors in terms of relations with Northeast Asia, in terms of necessary tax increases, consumption tax increases, and strategies to deal with an aging society. So there is consolidation still of the legacy and homework left for his successors. We have invited three. He's coming back, right? Maybe this isn't what he thought the speech was supposed to be about, and I scared him away. We've invited four leading experts on Japan, and in the order we'll hear from them. First, my good friend, Professor Len Schopa from the University of Virginia. As many of you know, Len is, I'm trying to think of how to put this, I don't know whether to say the Jerry Curtis of his generation or the Nat Thayer of his generation, but clearly one of the leading experts on Japanese domestic politics, with a good grounding in political science, political theory, but also in the internal workings of Nagatacho. Len has written two influential books. The first was on education policy, and he looked at the Zoku. The second was on U.S.-Japan trade negotiations, and it was a very expert analysis of when Gaiatsu works and doesn't work, and had a big influence in the late Clinton, early Bush thinking about how to structure economic relations with Japan. And he now has a book that is just on the bookshelves, called Race for the Exits, which is about the changing social safety net. I have not read that one yet, but look forward to it. Len is going to talk about this LDP presidential election, the leadership transition in the context of the post-war evolution of Japanese politics, faction politics, the role of the LDP, and so forth. The second speaker will be Yukiko Amakawa, The Amakawa legend in U.S.-Japan relations is growing in importance and fame. Amakawa-san studied at Georgetown and Missouri, at Missouri University of Missouri at Columbia, and she finished her PhD at Pacific Western University and now teaches at the Chiba Institute of Science. But that's the Amakawa on paper. The real Amakawa-san is daughter of a very influential strategic thinker in Japan and a close advisor over the past 5 years to the Prime Minister's office, the Chief Cabinet Secretary Fukuda, then to Mr. Hosoda, and then now more recently to Mr. Abe. And we've asked Amakawa-san to talk about what we might expect from cabinets led by either Mr. Abe or Mr. Fukuda or maybe Mr. Aso. I'm not sure how much Amakawa-san will be will be betting on each of these potential prime ministers, but we're going to ask her to look at what the cabinet would look like, what the priorities would be, and the policy substance. Then, back in his home ground at CSIS, Watanabe Tsunio, who was a fellow here at CSIS for about 10 years before going to Mitsui to be a key figure in their research institute. Nabe-san is known to pretty much everyone here, I'm sure, and we're going to ask him to look at this leadership transition in the context of Japan's overall party competition between the DPJ, the Democratic Party, the LDP, and the future of how overall political realignment and battles may unfold. And finally, we're very happy to be joined by Bojang Yang, who is currently at the Brookings Institution in the Northeast Asia program, but his home institution is the China Institute for Contemporary International Relations, KICR, where he's one of their leading Japan experts. And we've asked Professor Yang to comment on this leadership transition in terms of regional relations and especially how China views the transition. We had lunch, all of us, earlier. One of our conclusions, which may come out in the discussion, is that more than anyone, China has a casting vote on how this election might go, depending on how they, how the Chinese side chooses to respond to some issues coming up on Yaskuni and so forth. But we'll hear more from Professor Yang later. So let me turn it over first to Len. We'll ask each commentator to speak about 15 minutes, then we'll have some Q&A.
Okay. Since we have three such great Nagatacho insiders here to talk about the latest news from Tokyo, I thought I would concentrate my comments on the process of selecting the leader of the LDP has changed over the years to kind of situate the most recent leadership context in this process of change. What you'll find when we look at some of this history is that there's been some dramatic change, especially in the last 5 years, in how the prime minister is selected. And this naturally has a great influence on the kind of person who's going to do well, the kind of person that's going to be selected. So by focusing on the process of the change in the process, I hope to shed at least a little light on the kind of person who's going to come out of this contest. I have on the screen today a slide, just one slide that I'm going to share with you, that shows the factional politics in the LDP. The part of it that you can see right now is the old, very stable period of factional politics in the LDP. And in a minute, I'll slide down and we'll look at what's happened to the factions in the last 10 or 15 years, and you'll see that there's been a lot of change. I feel a little bit like one of those old Soviet hands or Sovietologists carrying around a picture of the Politburo. They used to make their living, you know, analyzing those photos, who was standing next to whom, to try to figure out who's going to come out on top in the next leadership struggle. And this is very much what Japan hands have been doing for years, looking at these factional maps and trying to figure out how many votes does each of the faction bosses have. If you knew how many each person had and who had made the deals with whom, you could quite accurately forecast, traditionally, who was going to come out of the top of one of these leadership races. But much of that has changed today. There's a lot more unknowns in the process that we're going to talk about. I still think it's useful to think about how the factions play into the process and how they might even make a comeback. So that'll be the provocative a conclusion, maybe, of my comments. Many people have said that Koizumi killed the factions. The factions are dead. I'm going to suggest that they might make a resurrection just in time to influence this race and could come back in some interesting ways, depending on how the leadership race unfolds. So briefly, let's highlight how things used to work within the LDP. What the chart shows, the yellow highlighted names are all the people who became prime minister. And what you'll see is that all of them were leaders of one of these five major LDP factions. So if you were studying that, who was going to come out on top in Japanese politics, up until 1989, all you really needed to do was keep track of who were the bosses of the factions and who were they talking to. And you could very accurately predict who the main contenders were and often who was going to come out on top. One exception to this in the early period was Prime Minister Suzuki, and he only emerged without first serving as a faction boss because his mentor passed away in office and he slid in as an exception to this rule. After 1989, we see some changes in the process, but I'm going to argue the factions still played a major role right up until 2001. So this is an enduring process. The classic example of how the LDP was chosen during this period, I'll just talk about one example, was 1987. That was a similar year to what we have now because it was wide open. All the previous generation of faction bosses had had a turn as prime minister, with the exception of Mr. Komoto. All the major ones had had a turn. And so it was wide open who of the next generation of leaders would become the prime minister. The leading contenders were Miyazawa, Takeshita, and the current contender, Abe Shinzo's father, Abe Shintaro. In the end, this race was decided when Abe made a deal with Takeshita, where he agreed to throw his support behind Takeshita in exchange for the post of foreign minister, and Takeshita's promised support the next time there was a leadership race. And this was decided on very straightforward math. The two bosses got the Komoto faction to go along with them, and so that the numbers are shown right there. Takeshita had 125 plus 84 plus 34, total of 243 seats, 343 votes within the Diet. Miyazawa had the support of just two factions, 89 plus 87 equals 176. The math was so clear-cut, they didn't bother holding a vote. They just emerged from the smoke-filled room, announced that Takeshita would be the new leader of the LDP and the new prime minister. Now, the LDP didn't always do it this way. They sometimes had primaries. They sometimes had votes. But every time, up until 2001, with the possible exception of the selection of Hashimoto in 1995, it was still basically determined by factions. And the person who won the LDP leadership candidate race was the one who got the mathematical majority support from the faction bosses needed to come up with one more than the majority. Now, in the traditional system, the formal rules allowed prefectural representatives to have one vote each. So in addition to the numbers you see there, which are Diet members, there were 47 votes for the prefectures during much of the period that we're talking about, who could get involved in the prime ministerial selection, the LDP leadership selection process. Anyone could run who had the support of 20 members of the Diet, and there would be multiple ballots. The person who had if no one won a majority on the first ballot, there would be a second ballot among the two leading contenders. Some elements of this carry over. You still have this multi-ballot procedure. You need to have a majority. You still need 20 votes from Diet members, 20 Diet members to support you to get into the race. Those features have stayed the same. A lot of other things have changed. Now, as you might guess, selecting the LDP leader this way definitely favored a certain kind of a leadership figure, one who could build up the size of their faction, increase the number of Diet members in their faction, and make deals with other faction bosses. That's how you got to be leader of the LDP. That's how you got to be prime minister, is by cutting these deals in smoke-filled rooms. Okay. As a result, the people who did well were the leading practitioners of these arts, were the politicians of the old Tanaka faction. Tanaka himself, Takeshita, Obuchi, maybe Hashimoto. These were the people who were able to convince the hot new recruits to join their faction, give them loads of cash, and boost up their numbers within the Diet to give their faction an advantage. They were also the people who were best at cutting deals, at making deals with other faction bosses. I'll give you this if you give me that, and coming out always on top. Through this process, the Tanaka faction was able to largely dominate the process of selecting the prime minister for many, many years. You can see in the Tanaka line, all the leaders had their turn as prime minister. Tanaka got to go first in his generation. Takeshita, first in his generation. Obuchi had a little bit different circumstances. Hashimoto snuck in ahead of him. But he eventually also got his turn as prime minister. Even when the Tanaka faction boss was not serving as prime minister, he was consistently part of the winning coalition, the group that had selected the prime minister that got other plum positions. Okay, so now let's start to talk about how this process has changed. I, Is that all I can get on the screen without losing everything? So maybe I might move it a little bit more in a second. What skills were not needed in this process? I should talk about what was not needed to do well in the old process. You didn't need to have much appeal to the public. And many of the faction bosses who became prime minister during this period were not known as good speakers. They were not good speakers. Mr. Obuchi was teased for having as much personality as cold pizza. Many of them didn't look good on TV. They didn't have to be good debaters. Now, the one thing they did have going for them was they were good coalition builders. So this did help them get legislation through the Diet. So we shouldn't say that they didn't have any relevant skills to being a good leader, but this is particularly where they excelled. And even when they were playing a role in getting legislation through the Diet, they frequently didn't have their own ideas that they were pushing. They were often pushing ideas that came up from the bureaucracy. To do well in the system, you didn't have to be a big policy intellectual of any kind to have these ideas that you would borrow from the bureaucracy and use your coalition skills to get them through. Now, this system started to come apart in the 1990s with the corruption scandals of the early 90s, and then with the change of the electoral system in 1994. The old electoral system with its multi-member districts forcing LDP members to compete against each other was very much important for consolidating the factional system within the LDP, because each member of this in the old electoral system, each member running against another LDP member needed the support of a faction boss to do well. And this was the glue that held the factions together. The new electoral system with one member per district or with PR, depending on what kind of seat you hold, does not require the support of a faction boss to do well. And so the factions have become looser. And so the factions have started to become more vulnerable. Now, this didn't mean that they suddenly became less important. You can see that even in the 1990s, we saw earlier, many of the faction people who became leader were bosses of factions, and they played, there were factional politics in most of the leadership races. And people thought as late as April 2001 that the factional process was once again going to select the LDP leader. It's useful to flashback to the period when Koizumi was selected to think about how much things have changed. Going into that race, most people, if we had had a CSIS event like this, and maybe we did, most people would have predicted that Hashimoto was going to win. He had the largest faction. I don't have the number up there, but in 2001, he had 101 members. The Horiuchi faction was leaning towards supporting him. They had 44 members. Kame was in the race, but if he came in third on the first ballot, it's quite likely that he would have thrown his support behind Hashimoto. So the mathematics among the Diet members looked like, once again, Hashimoto, coming from the Tanaka faction, was going to pull this out. On top of this, he had a lot of influence in the way that the prefectural delegates were going to be selected, many people thought, because of his support in the construction industry and the postal lobby, that they would generate a lot of local LDP votes in the primaries that would influence of how those votes were cast. However, just to finish the pre-election analysis, if you looked at Koizumi's situation going into this race, he had the support of just his own faction and two small factions and could count on only 98 votes. So you have Hashimoto with his faction alone, 101, more votes than Koizumi with his three factions that had lined up behind him. And so it did not look good for him. What upset this whole process from playing out as it had in previous times was the primary system that was used in this election. In this election, they increased the number of local representatives from one per prefecture to three per prefecture. Three per prefecture, 141 votes. So that meant that there were more votes coming from these local levels than any of the factions had under their control. And they were being allocated that time by winner-take-all in most cases. So in the end, when Koizumi did surprisingly well in the primary vote, which was held before the Diet members got to vote, he was able to turn 58% of the primary vote into 90% of the winner-take-all local delegate seats. So he came into the Diet vote with a huge advantage over all of his rivals. Even then, if all the factions had held together, they could have outvoted the local representatives. They could have still put Hashimoto into office. But because there was such overwhelming support for Koizumi and people were very nervous about an upcoming upper house election, a few of the members of other factions defected, went along with Koizumi, and allowed Koizumi to win the vote with 298 out of 484. Since I'm running out of time, I will skip quickly now to how much the process has changed in the period since Koizumi came into office. One important way in which he changed the process is through his example. He showed that the LDP could do very well in politics by attacking the faction system, by going against the factions and appealing to unaffiliated voters. The LDP won its biggest landslide in years. Last year, through this strategy, Koizumi went out of his way to always antagonize the faction bosses instead of making deals with them, and this seemed to play very well in Japanese politics. He was very good in televised Diet debates. He had a great turn of phrase on TV. All the kinds of things that didn't do well under the old system, Koizumi showed could prove very successful in Japanese politics. So his example is a major thing shaping the way the current race is being fought. But in addition to this, Koizumi deliberately took on the old faction bosses, especially the three largest factions which had been against him in 2001, the Hashimoto, Horiuchi, and Eto Kame factions. He deliberately underrepresented them in his cabinet. Previously, the custom was to give every faction proportional weight in your cabinet. He gave them minor posts, just a few posts, and instead packed the cabinet with his own friends, disregarding the faction system. And by steadily attacking them and wearing them down, and then last summer, using the postal issue to corner some of these leading opponents, force them into taking a position against him, and then using this as an excuse to expel them from his party, he was able to eliminate the top leadership of all three factions. So going into the current race, the Hashimoto faction is down from 101 in 2001 to 73 members. Here we can go down to the bottom. 73 and maybe not very united members. Eto Kame faction is down from 55 to 33. The Horiuchi faction is holding steady in numbers, but none of these factions has been able to put up a leadership candidate. That is a real sign of the weakness of these factions. They can't even put up a candidate into the race that can credibly challenge either of the two main contenders who are both from the Mori faction. Okay. So we have a situation in which we have a lot more factions. The factions have dispersed and become more numerous. Some of them are smaller, and many of them are not united. And finally, we have this time even more members being selected at the local levels. They've increased the number of people who are going to be representing the prefectures from 141 last time to 300 this time. 300 local representatives, 405 Diet members are going to decide who's going to become the next leader of the LDP. Now, these 300 members are not going to be selected winner-take-all this time. And this could make a big difference in how much they end up swaying the outcome. The result is not going to be announced until the last minute, at the same time the Diet members are voting. So there won't be an opportunity through the example of somebody, maybe Mr. Abe, winning large numbers of local delegates to somehow use this to influence the Diet members. I happen to think that they're going to have trouble keeping this information secret because they're going to hold the primaries a couple of days before the Diet members. There will probably be exit polls of some kind, and the papers will report that somebody did well. And this may still end up influencing how the Diet members vote if somebody like Mr. Abe does very, very well at the local level. But just to finish up, because I know I'm out of time, the numbers there give you an indication of how factions could come into play this time. Especially if the factions that were antagonized by Mr. Koizumi, the former Horiuchi faction, which is now the Niwa Koga faction, the former Hashimoto faction, which is now the Tsushima faction, and the former Eto Kame faction, which is now the Ibuki faction, all these leaderless, recently leadership transition factions, could decide that they have a chance to get back at Koizumi by attacking or ganging up on Mr. Abe. And if they can hold their votes together behind perhaps Mr. Fukuda, if they can push, especially if they can push the election to a second ballot and allow the Diet members to bring their full weight of their influence to bear, they may be able to make Mr. Fukuda indebted to them for his victory. If this is the way things play out, in that case, Mr. Fukuda may have to go back to rewarding faction bosses, and I may not feel so much like a former Sovietologist, and this chart may end up being very handy. Thank you.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for your kind introduction. Since Dr. Green has taken the Japan chair at CSIS, everyone in politics and academia wants to speak here. Politicians think it is a barometer of prestige to be invited as a speaker at CSIS. So Mike is a precious asset for CSIS. Japan, on the other hand, has missed Mike's being at the National Security Council at the White House. Everyone, including competing candidates Abe, Aso, Fukuda, and Tanigaki, all recognize Mike's value for U.S.-Japan relations. In contrast to Yasukuni and other issues, there is a point of solid agreement among all four. Mike is a very rare person. Both Abe and Fukuda have distinctive likes and dislikes about people. Both of them are very fussy and choosy about their friends, but they both really like and respect Mike. During Fukuda's 4 years at CCS, Mike was the only U.S. government official who could have dinner with him on a one-on-one basis. Mike visited Tokyo probably 3 or 4 times each year. Fukuda never failed to have him to dinner whenever he visited Tokyo. Mike was the only U.S. government official who was allowed to call Fukuda on his cell phone anytime. Right?
No comment.
He's still a diplomat. Incumbent Chief Cabinet Secretary Shinzo Abe wrote a congratulatory message for Mike's wedding, "Nippon ga mottomo shinrai suru Mike Green-san," for Mike, whom Japan trusts most. So, is that enough?
I'm not running.
Let me briefly touch on how the LDP presidential election will operate this time. There are approximately 1 million LDP paid-up members. A total of 300 votes are allocated for them. Of these, each of the 47 prefectures is allocated from 4 to 10 votes, depending on how many votes were cast. When Koizumi was elected in April 2001, he won a sweeping victory, taking almost all of these local prefectural votes. Local votes were counted first, and thus local votes affected the Diet members' decision. This time, however, local votes and Diet members' votes will be counted simultaneously, as he said. Local votes are to be counted by the don't method. Last time, Koizumi won a landslide victory because he captured almost all the local votes of all the prefectures. There are now 406 LDP upper and lower house members, 294 for the House of Representatives, and 112 for the House of Councillors. If Abe wins a simple majority of, say, 300 votes, but falls short of an absolute majority of 354, he would be required to contest a runoff election with his closest contender. Only the 406 LDP Diet members would be eligible to vote in such a runoff election between Abe and Fukuda. It is conceivable that this could favor Fukuda as Abe's popularity among general members is high. Today I'd like to focus on the policies of Mr. Abe and Fukuda. There are two reasons why I'd like to pay attention to just Abe and Fukuda. One reason is since my father served as a foreign policy advisor to former Prime Minister Takeo Fukuda, Both Abe and Fukuda have been longtime family friends for over 50 years. Unfortunately, I have no contact with Mr. Tanigaki, and I don't know anything about him. The second reason is that recent media polls indicate Abe has been leading the race and that Fukuda is rapidly catching up with Abe, and you can just take a look at the handout. Asahi Shimbun's polls, for example, show Abe with 41% support, Fukuda 29%, Aso 3%, Tanigaki 1% as of May 23rd, 2006. Only a month ago, Abe had 45% to Fukuda's 20%. Fukuda has never mentioned the possibility of running for the LDP presidential election. It has always been a Fukuda family principle that one should never seek the prime ministership. One should only become a candidate upon being pushed to do so by one's colleagues. Abe, too, has never clearly indicated an intention to run, yet both he, along with Aso and Tanigaki, have at least made positive hints, quote, provided there is a chance, unquote. Fukuda is the only one who has not shown any interest, so many people believe Fukuda will not make a bid for the presidency, but both he and Abe will. Abe set a political target for himself to be the prime minister when he was the deputy chief cabinet secretary. Fukuda was named once in a while as a possible prime minister while he was the chief cabinet secretary. I did not think he was considering the possibility very seriously when in office as the CCS. After he quit his CCS post, Fukuda started having informal gatherings with the media every day. Fukuda also started having dinner with business people every day. Fukuda has not normally been so ambitious and eager as to devote his time to having such dinners with business and political people every day. But amazingly, he did. As a result of his doing this for over a year, the business community people now publicly say the Prime Minister should not visit Yasukuni Shrine. Mr. Seishiro Eto is Fukuda's campaign manager. Mr. Eto told me the fact that he spent a few days in January and February last year to tape conversations to be published in book form. Mr. Eto told me he felt confident Fukuda had made up his mind right after their taped dialogue. Both Abe and Fukuda were curious to know what I was going to say today at CSIS. On the evening of May 9th, Fukuda and I chatted for a while. He said he was very much excited to visit Washington, D.C. for the first time in 7 years. He visited Washington, D.C. from May 10th to the 17th, as you all know. And then he asked me what I was going to say today. I found Fukuda on my way to Narita Airport on Monday. He was very amicable and not cynical, as usual. I also talk with Abe quite frequently. Actually, he woke me up fairly early this morning. He said, have a good talk about 6 a.m. today. Both of them probably thought I might badmouth them. Well, I respect former Prime Minister Fukuda. He was like my grandfather. PM Fukuda proposed the importance of omnidirectional foreign policies, Zenhoi Gaiko. So I would like to adopt his omnidirectional foreign policies, and I shall pretend to keep equal distance from both Abe and Fukuda today. Mr. Seishiro Eto phoned me on my way to the airport on Monday. I asked him whether Aso and Tanigaki will remain in the race. Eto made an interesting analysis. He said Aso and Tanigaki should form a coalition this time. Neither of them alone can recruit 20 sponsors to run for the election. Aso asked Mori to lend a couple of sponsors from his faction some time ago. Eto believes Tanigaki will hand over his chance to Aso this time. Eto said Aso will not drop out, but stay in the race until the end. Eto analyzes that if there are over three candidates, no one can gain an absolute majority of 354 votes. If no one receives an absolute majority, then the LDP must hold a runoff between the two candidates with the most votes. In this case, most likely the runoff will be between Abe and Fukuda. Abe, now 51, has raised two securities as his political themes ever since he was elected to the Diet for the first time in 1993, international security and social security. Since his first election to the Diet, Abe has belonged to the party and House Social Security committees. He tackled pension, medical, and nursing care systems. He always asserts the importance of a warm safety network. Abe has a good grasp of the social security issue. Related to social security issue, Abe has proposed second challenge promotion project. One of his constituents told Abe the fact that if someone goes bankrupt, he loses trust and he cannot stand up and take up challenges again throughout his life. Abe is advocating this second challenge project so that anyone who fails once will be able to get a second chance in his life. Koizumi smashed the old-style LDP, and he made structural reforms in 5 years. As a result of it, social differentials have widened. Abe is trying to revise Koizumi's market principle and narrow the social disparity to help the weak. Abe's grandfather, former Prime Minister Kishi, had noticed the importance of the U.S.-Japan alliance during World War II. Kishi was determined to sign the U.S.-Japan Security Treaty. Abe was a small child when a storm of opposition occurred against the U.S.-Japan Security Treaty. Abe is, in a way, determined to continue his grandfather's will. Abe's foreign policy is thus clearly based on the solid foundation of the U.S.-Japan Security Alliance. To Abe, collective defense is worldwide common sense. Then Abe told me he has an intention of developing good relations with India and Australia. Fukuda's primary interest is a sense of balance. Fukuda keeps saying it is a pity to worsen China-Japan relations by the Yasukuni issue. Fukuda will make Yasukuni an election issue, whereas Koizumi and Abe do not want it to be an issue. I think it all depends on whether Prime Minister Koizumi will visit Yasukuni before his term ends at the end of September. Fukuda's foreign policies have consistently been affiliated with Asia. Fukuda's father proposed the Fukuda Doctrine in 1979 when he was the PM. The Fukuda Doctrine mentions the importance of heart-to-heart mutual trust. It also explains why Japan turned away from our path to being a military power. Yasuo Fukuda will follow his father's path. Fukuda is very much a realist. Fukuda already mentioned publicly the need to raise the consumption tax, while Abe shies away to raise it immediately. Fukuda proposed Fukuyoka na Nippon. I don't know the right Japanese, but anyway, it looks like it's Japan at ease. In his book with Seishiro Eto, published in May 2005. Senior Diet members who were not treated well by Koizumi may support Fukuda, expecting him to balance reform with some revised faction theory. And you can ask him about that. Whichever becomes the next prime minister, he will continue to intensify U.S.-Japan relations. Although both Abe and Fukuda will maintain the alliance, they will not set the same tone, especially in the area of international security. For example, Abe persuaded Prime Minister Koizumi to deploy our Aegis destroyers to the Indian Ocean, while Fukuda was more cautious. Fukuda is more cautious on collective defense. Abe was very active in advocating the deployment of our engineering battalion to Iraq. In conclusion, one word about the Yasukuni Shrine. Fukuda will certainly not go, as you know. As for Abe, he has not made his decision and is considering the matter. And I hope you don't ask me any further. Well, time runs quickly. I'll be happy to share ideas with you, with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. 次は Nabe-san.
The my assignment is to watch to see the coming the LDP presidential election through some contrast to the position of opposition. Opposition, the DPJ, has a very strong impact. And the other one is actually related to the past LDP presidential election. Actually, the 1972 presidential election was very interesting to watch because the very major actor already, the Len Chopa explained, but that's related to the major issue, the foreign policy. Foreign policy seldom be the issue, but it was 1792, was remember? That's the hot issue is whether Japan can normalize relation with China after the Kissinger's surprising visit to China. So the two issues I'd like to touch. Amakawa-san kindly prepared a very good summary of the poll between Abe and Fukuda. And I have my own one, the Nikkei one, the very similar one. If you take a look at this seat, the clear one thing is that very recently the Fukuda Yasuo is catching up to Abe Shinzo. But looking back of last year or March, in the Kyodo News, the March, the Fukuda Yasuo is just 10%, but April, 22%, gained 10 points. The number I have from Nikkei 1 is also similar. The Abe, in March, Abe was 41% and Fukuda 14%. But in May, the Abe slightly reduced the point 34, and the Fukuda become 21. So why the Fukuda is suddenly becoming very popular or catching up? That I may explain what happened in April. Probably if you stay in Washington, D.C., difficult to feel the atmosphere in the Japanese politics, especially the media politics. That was the Koizumi's area. Well, in April, what happened is the email scandal, false email scandal of DPJ. What happened? The one former DPJ member, Nagata, was trying to prepare to criticize the government and the LDP, especially the email suggested the money transaction, probably illegal or some immoral money transaction from Mr. Horie, the rising star of Japanese the capital business, but now under the prosecution. So the false emails, it's known to the false, but the other time, Mr. Nagata suggested big money coming from Horie to the Takebe, Secretary General of LDP. And that email turned out to be the ruthless or no the supporting data. So DPJ became very, very unpopular. I think the people tend to regard the DPJ was so bad and the immature. At that time, DPJ was led by the young leader, Maehara. Maehara was at that time 43 years old, very young and handsome, and somehow hawkish. That the image is overlapped with Abe. So, but I know the terrible things happened to the DPJ. What happened? The management. The by-election in Chiba in early May, DPJ won in Chiba. And the troubled Nagata is coming from Chiba. What happened to DPJ? Why DPJ won in the by-election to LDP? The secret is actually I don't want to touch, but I cannot avoid the role of my father, Kozo Watanabe. He suddenly appointed to the chairman of diet management, and he knew how to manipulate actually the audience through media. He knew how the Koizumi is good, and he may have a potential, but he didn't have a chance to use it, and he tested. And it was successful. He appeared on the TV every time and trying to make a defend DPJ and also the sincere apology for the false email. And even he's demanding Mr. Nagata to resign as early as possible. But reality is that Nagata didn't resign. So the strong and the severe criticism on the DPJ forced Maehara to resign. And after that, already the Kozo Watanabe is a control of the in the media flow. So he advocated the open election to the new leader. And at that time, the major candidate was Naoto Kan, former party leader, and Ichiro Ozawa, legendary conservative and former party leader of his own liberal party. And that election was a very the interesting one because some strong pressure to the why within the DPJ party, why don't we have some unified candidate? Avoid a strong competition. Strong competition may lead to the split of a party. Did you hear similar argument here now in the LDP? The Prime Minister Mori is trying to have a unified candidate, Abe and Fukuda. But at that time, it was the Kozo Watanabe who argued we really need a competition. We don't need any under-the-table management thinks that's bad. And at that time, I didn't realize what the intention of my father, but clearly the strong competition among the Kan and Ozawa rewarded because the public really started to think about that Ozawa is a really good leader image. And also, Ozawa said he changed himself. And he devoted the make effort to the by-election in Chiba, the standing on the orange box, that's a small box, and contrasting to the Koizumi making the voices in the big city. But the Ozawa chose a very rural area. Anyway, the Ozawa was successfully done so far as a leader. And what happened to, what is the relation with the popularity grown in Fukuda and catching up Abe? People started to think all the politician is not so bad. And because of the trouble of Maehara in the mismanagement, oh, sometimes a young leader may look good, but immature to handle the political matters. And such an image is very, very the widespread. And that's one of the reasons why the Fukuda is catching up. And of course, the several combination of Fukuda. According to the Nikkei newspaper, what is the reason of the person who chose Fukuda as a leader? The 49% in May, Fukuda's supporter prefer his foreign and security policy. That's clear. The people are interested in the Fukuda's more Asia-oriented policy, as Amakawa-san explained, the new Fukuda doctrine kind of things. So, and the 49% of Mr. Abe's supporter prefer his personality and image. So that's contrasting. That was the major reason why the Fukuda is catching up, and several the combination of the preference. For example, the Ozawa and Watanabe both originally from Takeshita Tanaka faction. That faction dominated in a long time in LDP politics, and also their kind of the good connection with the Chinese leadership, since their leader Kakue Tanaka the normalized with China. So I think as the Ozawa is regarded as probably pro-China, and Watanabe's comment is very, very subtle and giving a very tricky message to LDP. his position is clear. Leader should not visit Yaskun. And at the same time, he used to be the co-chairman of visiting Yaskuni Shrine of a parliamentary member. That was somehow the established the maneuver way of a Takeshita faction or Hashimoto faction. That's as a Diet member, they can visit Yaskuni. But if they are in the cabinet, they refrain from visiting. And I think the DPJ side the sending this kind of a message to public. For example, in the TV show, the Kozo Watanabe says they asked by the who's gonna be the next LDP leader, and he said Abe-kun is likely to be elected, but I prefer Fukuda as a national leader of Japan. So tricky message to the sending both. And of course, the one thing is that his message is the pro-China message, but the other one is it's nice for DPJ to have an election and a split in Mori faction, competing Abe and Fukuda, and finally leading to the split of LDP or factions. That's beneficial for DPJ. So I think a very tricky one. So I think that's about the role of DPJ and Kozo Watanabe. And I think the Kozo Watanabe is still the favorite of media now. Probably you cannot imagine if you are not in Japan. But now I'm amazed at the meeting of young ladies. Usually young ladies are not so interested in the politics, and they don't know the my father. I'm introduced to that. This person is a son of Kozo Watanabe. So, oh yeah, so that was before. But now, wow, you're a son of Kozo Watanabe. That's big change, really. And looking back at the 1970 election, that was a good suggestion. I think looking back at 1970 presidential election, LDP, that was a competition between Takeo Fukuda, the father of Yasuo Fukuda, and Kakue Tanaka, that's the master of the largest faction later. And that time, race was to Kakue Tanaka won. But that race was a very, very close race. Of course, Fukuda has been the mainstream of conservative politics. And Kakue Tanaka was a rising star. And the issue was, the hidden issue was how to normalize the relation with China. And Fukuda Takeo has been a very pro-Taiwan person. And as a foreign minister, he made the best effort to save the status of Taiwan at the time. And Kakue Tanaka didn't have any direction of the foreign policy at that time. But many people suggested Tanaka should go to the normalization with China. And Tanaka followed such a kind of a popular opinion. And Amakawa-san pointed out the system of LDP. If in the first vote there's no majority, there's a second vote. And the second vote could have a possibility to gather the votes of loser in the first vote. And that was Tanaka's tactics. Tanaka had agreement with other faction leader such as Ohira or Miki, a liberal-minded pro-China guy. And if in the final vote, you guys, we're gonna make agreement to vote each other. And in the first vote, Fukuda won, and Kakue Tanaka was second place. However, the Fukuda didn't get the majority vote. And go to the second vote, finally, Miki and Ohira, and I think at the time, Nakasone too, that these group had followed the agreement and voted to the Tanaka, and Tanaka won the position. So very, very interesting case, because it's the issue, it's a foreign issue and related to China. And LDP, the presidential election is a very tricky part to have agreement. So if I'm asked to the who gonna win, Abe or Fukuda, very difficult, too early to call. But the very possibility to the even Abe is popular and getting first vote, but Fukuda has a potential to get the others' vote on the China issue or Yasukuni issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me here today to discuss together with my colleagues from Japan, Tokyo, and from U.S. On this very interesting topic on post-Koizumi Japan's politics as well as foreign policy. I'm going to touch upon basically three or four points based on what my colleagues just mentioned. One is the first one is going to be some very brief remarks on the posture, the gesture so far China has been taking, and secondly, I'm going to talk a little bit on the proportion of diplomacy during the coming presidential election of the LDP. And third one, and I'm going to give a little bit discussion on what's the diplomatic implication of the race. And finally, if time allows me to do so, I'm going to add something about Sino-Japanese relations. If I don't have, otherwise I'm going to leave it to save it for later on discussion. First point, let me just start from my conclusion, because time is so limited. I think it's a pretty good it's a pretty common for a researcher to predict the outcome of a election. This is our job, but for a nation, I don't think it's wise, it's clever to bet on a certain candidate or even potential candidate. And I think so far the posture taken by China has been very apparent, which is, I summarized, just wait and see, while trying its best to create some sort of a favorable environment and atmosphere to get the environment ready to prepare the relationship with Japan. That's what the Chinese government has been doing so far. I think the reason is for Chinese to do so is very clear, because just as my colleagues Watanabe-san mentioned just now, it's too much complicated to predict a precise outcome of election. Actually, every country, China or even U.S., handle it in the same way, which we can tell, we could tell from last time Fukuda's visit here in Washington, D.C. We can tell why he, as just a member of the Diet, he received so much warm, that a warm reception here by the officials and the congressmen. It's too much and too early to predict. Actually, in this regard, following up what my colleagues mentioned, I even can give further elements, factors to prove how such election will be difficult to predict. Some very tiny element, some small technical elements. What I'm talking about is the possibility of the of an extension of the diet. It doesn't matter. So far, at this point, it's scheduled for I guess June 18th. The diet is going to be closed. But if there is an extension of the diet, it does impact the outcome of the race. And generally speaking, I think the longer the diet extends, the less favorable for Abe. Because as everybody knows, Fukuda-san seems not so good at dealing with the mass media. When once the diet is closed, that means both of the potential candidates will get off the diet schedule and put in front of the in the spotlight of mass media. That would be a sort of a disadvantage of Fukuda-san. So for him, such a period, shorter, the better. I think I read something about his personality. I think some senior Japanese politician once told him, saying your way to win is to keep low key. That's what he was told by a senior Japanese politician who died not before long. My second point is diplomacy this time will be one of the focuses of the election. Such a topic, I mean diplomacy, it depends on the situation on the ground, whether or not becomes one of the focuses. But this time, my sense is it will be one of the focuses. Although there are lots of domestic issues lining up for the race, like three or four is following, how to increase the revenue, how to deal with the consumption tax, and how to deal with the increasing social disparity. Although, in spite of such so many domestic issues, but diplomatic issues is too profound, too serious to be ignored. So my sense is, unlike some other previous elections, this time diplomacy is going to be one of the focuses of the election. And besides, furthermore, I think it's not limited to Sino-Japanese relations. It's far beyond that. Actually, at first glance, it's the deadlock of Sino-Japanese relations, the deadlock of the relationship between ROK and Japan. But at second or third glance, it should be beyond that, far beyond that, should be connected with three other deeper issues. One is connected to self-position of Japan in the globe, in such a rapidly changing globe. And so, what is Japan's surviving and developing strategy is going to be asked. Secondly, it will be connected directly to the settlement of a post-war Japan, not post-Cold War, but post-war Japan, mainly made by the U.S. government at that time. And thirdly, it will be connected to its so-called basic placement of the U.S. and China plus ROK maybe on such a blue picture given by the candidates respectively. And so my conclusion for this part is like different viewpoints on diplomacy of the potential candidates. It does matter. It does impact the outcome of the election this time. My third point is, precisely speaking, Fukuda Tai Abe-san, what's the diplomatic implication of the race? I'm going to touch a little bit detail here. I have three or four sub-points to make here. First of all, I would like to say, basically, there would be no difference on the policy toward U.S. Although some people in Tokyo argued, some people in Beijing argued that after Koizumi stepping down, the ties will have a what? It's a backlash or decline because the relationship nowadays is too much based on personal ties. I don't agree with that. I think the basic track has been lining here, and it's not going to be changed at a substantial level. The second point is this is also about Fukuda and Abe-san. They have something in common. I don't think they. I'm sorry. Let me put it this way. I think they. Either both of them will not remain in the status quo in the relationship with the ROK and China. In other words, they both want to make some difference, if not a breakthrough with the relationship. The differences happens with what kind of approaches they are going to take. So, and next, I think either Fukuda-san and Abe-san has his own favorable or unfavorable points from a Chinese perspective. This is my basic sense. For example, Abe-san, so far it remains unclear whether he will with his Yasukuni Shoin incapacity of Prime Minister. But he has to consider about how to break through such a deadlock with China. And given the impression I read in my I met with him in Tokyo, I think he's a much more thoughtful guy in comparison with some other Japanese politicians. Some colleagues at home, some of my colleagues at home, they prefer to say this is a sort of a political strategy for Abe not to clarify whether he's going to be there in capacity of prime minister. It's just a sort of a political strategy to prevent political disaster, political suicide. It's such a very sensitive timing. But I have questions for him. One is, it's not necessarily connected with Yasukuni Shoin. What is the overall picture for Japan's diplomatic strategy ahead? So far, we see some similarity between Koizumi and Abe Shinzo. They have very striking, outstanding policy towards some certain country or some countries, but without a grant diplomatic strategy. We cannot see this strategy. We cannot see the whole picture. So in Japanese, we say "ポツンとポツンと," 天意識的な. And the second question for him is, will, in some cases, will Abe go populist? Especially in case he is stuck with some domestic political issues, is it possible for him to just to avert the attention from a domestic issue to foreign problem disputes? It's, I'm quite skeptical about this point. Here comes to Fukuda. I think with Fukuda as a prime minister, new prime minister of Japan, it should be more positive that Yasu Kuni Shrine will be resolved, and either by removing the A-class war criminals out, or by having a new memorial. I myself respect Fukuda-san very much, and we also heard a lot about his basic status as stance towards China. But I think it's too simple to characterize a politician by saying he's pro-China or anti-China. And I also got some questions for him, even one more than Abe's case. I have three for him. And the first one is, it's more apparent with Fukuda-san as the new prime minister, there will be a breakthrough with the historical disputes between China and Japan. So it means breakthrough means a grand deal, means a grand deal. As for a deal, we have to pay. So what's the cost will be for China to pay? Is it a free lunch? I don't think so. The second point is, since given what he has been saying and doing in past month, a couple of months, my sense is that this is a very high quality politician with a very strong sense of a balance. So what does that kind of feeling of balance mean exactly? What I can tell so far is the balance between United States and China, and secondly, maybe balance between China and other ancient countries. And so what's next? For example, how about the cross-strait relationship? I mean, mainland China and Taiwan Strait, and the Taiwan Island. My third question is for him is very simple. If there is Fukuda regime, how long is it going to last? Until next year, until the upper house election, or beyond that? And so I have a fourth point about Sino-Japanese relations, but I think I do better stop here and save it later for the discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Young. The I think there are some consistent themes. One is that this election is too close to call, at least between Mr. Abe and Mr. Fukuda. Our panelists seem to have counted out Mr. Aso and Mr. Tanigaki, but they may have some role in the kingmaker phase of this. We've learned that this election has been good for Watanabe-san's social life. That was an important insight. In terms of U.S.-Japan relations and the U.S.-Japan alliance, from a U.S. perspective, it's two pretty good choices. And the debate is not between China versus the U.S., it's on how to approach China, which I think for those of us who work in U.S.-Japan alliance relations is a good news story. And even as Professor Young pointed out, on China, it's not pro-China versus anti-China, it's how to approach
relations with China, where both Fukuda and Abe would be quite proactive, but perhaps in different ways. I want to open up to questions and answers. We're going to have a microphone, so if you could wait till the microphone gets to you. While our microphone experts are preparing to rush to you with the microphone, let me just ask one quick question. You know, there's a saying, of course, in Japanese politics that one step ahead is darkness. We have 4 months away and a close race, and already the Diet extension is an issue that's been raised. I want to ask, anyone can answer or no one, but we know that Prime Minister Koizumi will be here in June for a summit. There's a possibility, a very good possibility, I would say, that Prime Minister Koizumi might visit Yasukuni on August 15th. And there's a possibility, maybe less likely, but a possibility that North Korea could launch a Taepodong. And I wonder if any of these would have a major impact in your view of who would be stronger off. The U.S.-Japan summit, the possible Yasukuni visit in August by Prime Minister Koizumi, and a possible Taepodong launch by North Korea.
I don't think the Koizumi coming to Washington is going to have a particular impact on this race, because as you said, both of these men, leading contenders, are supportive of good relations, and I'm sure they'll be cheering Koizumi on to have a good summit. So I don't see how that could particularly impact it. At lunch, we did speculate about what if Koizumi visited the Yasukuni Shrine and really helped make that a major issue in the contest. And I'll just share what other people were saying at lunch was how this plays out in Japanese domestic politics will depend a great deal on how China reacts. If China makes an announcement, we don't stand for this, the next prime minister better not attend Yasukuni again or things are going to really get bad. If they get really aggressive, this could really play into Abe's hands, because it will look like Fukuda is weak and he's going along with China's pressure. If China makes only a little bit of noise about this, enough to remind the Japanese voters that this is a source of friction in U.S.-Japan relations, then that could play in favor of Fukuda, because he is seen as a person more likely to improve relations with China. But I don't want to speak for all the others, so if others want to modify that.
I assume a Taepodong launch would probably be better for Abe-san, in your views? Yeah. Okay. Just want to keep the North Koreans in this to keep it interesting. Mr. Ambassador.
Let me take you back to an earlier American politician, Tip O'Neill, who said all politics are local. Right? We've talked a lot about the foreign policy aspects of a Japanese election, and one wonders if foreign policy is really the issue that is going to sway the Japanese voter, or perhaps the state of the economy, which is better in Tokyo but still not too good in Fukuoka. How does the domestic scene play into all of this talk about the election? And do any of the candidates seem to have an edge in this particular aspect of it?
I'm not sure the mic was on. Did everyone hear that? Okay, good. Thanks.
It's green.
It was on. Okay, green's good.
Thank you, Ambassador Clark. That's very the good point, actually, the domestic politics. And they don't have time to mention the several things. But domestic politics is issue, especially in LDP. Several politicians didn't like Koizumi reform. So anti-Koizumi had a potential to get together against Koizumi's favorite. I think Koizumi's favorite is Abe. So I have a little bit room more in the fact. I cannot say the who said, but the interesting thing is the faction Kamei, who took over Kamei's faction? Ibuki. Ibuki. the my friend who is known very good at the Asia policy is become suddenly very popular among the LDP faction, especially including Ibuki faction. Ibuki is a conservative faction, and I don't think they are interested in in China policy. However, they asked the China experts. That means they could utilize this kind of the asking you a China issue to the frustration against the Koizumi reform. That aspect is very important, I think. And also the age difference. I think I told you that if the age is not electability issue, before age was electability, so younger is better. But now the older is okay. If so, Abe has a potential the enemy. That's 275 potential enemy in LDP because the Abe is a 276 older. So naturally, member doesn't like younger leader because if younger leader came, difficult to be elected next leader. And Fukuda is just 41 older, so less enemy. So that's very important aspect.
Amakawa-san or Len or anyone, Amakawa-san, you just said that one of Mr. Abe's principles is to narrow the social gap from the Koizumi reforms. So is it really the case that Abe would continue reform more than Fukuda-san? Or do we just not know how each would take the reform agenda from here?
Well, I'm sure if Abe becomes the prime minister, he'll continue Koizumi reform. And I don't know if Mr. Koizumi will nominate him, but at a certain point after the summit, on July the 15th, they will be active. And Abe definitely will continue Koizumi's reform, while Fukuda cannot oppose the reform, but he'll probably adjust more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Other.
Can I have?
Oh, yeah, please.
Can I add one thing? I mean, the politics in the LDP for the last 5-8 years has all been whether you're for or against the Koizumi reforms. And Koizumi did an incredible job of taking something which is generally unpopular, making Japan more market-oriented, introducing market mechanisms to make it more efficient, and choosing one issue, the postal reform, that actually had a lot of popular support, and fighting on that issue. But all the next steps to the Koizumi reform, moving in the direction of fiscal retrenchment, and all these things are unpopular. Raising the consumption tax really is the natural next step in dealing with Japan's economic problems, but it's very unpopular. So Fukuda has been the one who's willing to say he's going to raise the consumption tax. In fact, just about anybody who becomes leader of Japan is going to have to raise the consumption tax.
Yeah. Thank you very much. My name is Takenaka, Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi. UFJ. Yeah, I have two questions. The first one is to Nabe-san. Thank you very much. Yeah, I was a little bit surprised at your insightful explanation that the failure of Maehara damaged not only the image of DPJ, but also the image of Abe. So it had an effect, a kind of a suicide bomb. So my question is, which one is a tougher prime minister, Abe or Fukuda, for DPJ? Now, one of the congressmen of DPJ told me that Prime Minister Fukuda will be tougher. So this is the question. And the next question is maybe to Amakawa-san or to anybody. So we can understand very clearly the difference between Abe-san and Fukuda-san in the foreign policy. Of course, difference is not so big, but actually some fact different. But how about the difference about domestic policy? So I can't understand if there is any substantial or meaningful difference both of them. But I know at the same time, some anti-Koizumi politicians are trying to gather to support Mr. Fukuda. So does he have any such element to be favored by anti-Koizumi reform people? Thank you.
the which is tough. It's an interesting combination. If now the DPJ is Ozawa, for Ozawa probably the Abe is easier. Abe looks very immature compared to the Ozawa, and the Fukuda is tougher. And for Maehara, I think the Fukuda is tougher. For Maehara, the Abe is tougher because the images are overlapping. So I think currently, for DPJ, probably for Ozawa, Abe is easier to defeat. But at the same time, we don't know the popularity of Fukuda. Fukuda is not so good at making the popularity. So we still don't know. And I really wanted to hear the voice of DPJ. And DPJ so far didn't have a concrete idea which is easier. Probably the tactics of DPJ is it's nice to have a split and confused DPJ to fight.
Regarding the domestic policies, Abe has proposed this second challenge project since March or so. And he kept saying that, and Fukuda has not touched anything about that. I don't think he has any interest in that. And also, Abe is trying to narrow the gap, and Fukuda has not mentioned anything about it. So I don't think they share that same idea on that point. Fukuda. Has mentioned about Japanese economy, domestic economy, and he has more interest in domestic economy. So did his father, but Abe has not mentioned very clearly about the economy, and yet. But it all depends on once the diet is closed. I don't know if the diet will be extended or not. Koizumi, Prime Minister Koizumi, asked the chairman of the Diet Affairs Committee 2 days ago not to extend, but that doesn't mean that the diet will not be extended. They may have to extend it for a few weeks to pass the educational reform. So it all depends on when it's going to be closed, but Abe clearly said that he cannot do any campaigning before July the 15th summit. So they will probably announce all those policies after, I don't know exact date, but they're just waiting for the right timing. And definitely there'll be some differences. Fukuda's interest is more or less economy, and Abe more on the social security and foreign affairs. But foreign affairs has been always been their center of interest for both candidates. And before that, even for the general election, foreign policy could not be the central issue. But these days, for example, like Iraq, foreign policies could be the so-called main theme for the election, general election. So foreign affairs could be the main theme. Not necessarily, it doesn't have to be the domestic policies all the time. And Fukuda probably will pay more attention to domestic economy, and he has already mentioned about the necessity to raise the consumption tax. He was brave enough to say that, but he already publicly said that a few days ago. But Abe said that before that, he's trying not to say that right away. He said we need to do a little bit more of reforms and so on. And then if we cannot save some, and he's thinking about selling government buildings and so on. And then after that, he said he will think about raising the consumption tax. So that's the big difference. But eventually we have to raise the consumption tax. But Abe has not said anything about that yet. So, and what was the second question?
That's good, yeah.
Okay.
May I add something to that? Yeah. Let me just add something to that response to the questions. And I have 3 points. One is on who is going to be more interested in your reform. My personal impression is like maybe Abe Shinzo is the one. So I agree with my colleague. And but the problem is that they cannot, regardless of Abe Shinzo or Fukuda-san, it's very difficult for them to just duplicate Koizumi style, because Koizumi is a president styled, fashioned prime minister. He has been too much strong for any candidate's successor to follow him. So they have to be more cooperative with the party. And secondly, they have to pick up other new top priorities to focus on to do reform. So as I mentioned in the beginning, I think there are going to be 3 points. One is how to increase the revenue, resource sources, and secondly, it's about the consumption tasks. But I'm quite skeptical if Abe Shinzo is a prime minister, whether or not he's brave enough to touch this very tough issue, I mean the consumption, because LDP used to be suffering a lot from such a topic. And thirdly is about how to deal with the increasing social disparity, increasing social gap. And thirdly, about your third question, who is tougher, Fukuda-san or Abe-san? I have the same sense with my Japanese colleagues. And I think if there is Fukuda cabinet. Once the Fukuda cabinet jumps over next year's election of the Arab House, it's going to be a long cabinet, a long regime, and under which both Abe Shinzo or Ozawa-san will be going to swap it out. Of the way to be next prime minister. Thank you.
So Abe-san's plan is to sell government buildings, probably including the Ministry of Finance, and then they'll have to call in their proposals from cell phones and public pay phones on how to raise consumption taxes. I have to weigh in a little bit on this one. I think the consumption tax issue is conventional wisdom or is common wisdom enough that it's not quite the poison pill for anyone that that it would have been for, you know, Takeshita or Hashimoto when they raise the consumption tax. My sense is it's everyone expects it, and it may not be that that controversial. We had a question over here.
Thank you. Christopher Preble with the Cato Institute. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the importance of foreign policy and with reference to Yasukuni and Japanese-Chinese relations, ROK-Japanese relations, but no one mentioned anything with respect to constitutional revision, particularly Article 9, and I'm curious, is that because you do not believe it is going to be an issue in any meaningful sense, and if not, why not, or if, in fact, this is going to be an issue in the campaign, in what way? And I'm particularly interested whether or not, if there is agreement within the LDP factions, whether or not the DPJ might try to make it an issue. Thank you.
I'd like to touch the DPJ side, constitutional issue. I think constitutional revision was very upbeat last year because the DPJ side approach to the LDP, especially at the time the LDP, DPJ leader was Maehara, who is not shy to talking about the exercise of a collective defense or the positive security issue. But after Maehara, I think nobody knows Ozawa's tactics. Ozawa may share some positive attitude defense, but at the same time, Ozawa is a very domestic politics oriented tactician. So I think a retreat from DPJ may impress the people are not so upbeat for constitutional revision, because constitutional revision definitely need a two-thirds of Diet member. So current coalition cannot.
But Nabe-san, you suggested earlier that for Ozawa, Fukuda is more frightening. It's sort of like when you ask Karl Rove, who would you like to run against? And he says, oh, we're afraid of Hillary Clinton. But if Abe-san made constitutional revision an issue, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be bad for DPJ because it's more of a divisive issue in the DPJ than it is in the LDP?
Yeah, I think so. So why don't you tell Abe-san? I think that's a good one.
Do you think Abe-san would make constitutional revision a major theme?
For the election?
No. For the election, or if he becomes prime minister for his cabinet.
If he becomes a prime minister, I'm sure he will. That's what he always wanted to do, and I think that's why he has become the politician. So from the very beginning, when he was elected first time in 1993, he wanted to work on the constitutional revision. So, and he's still working on it now. But do you think Fukuda will make it?
I mean, it's interesting that you didn't think that he would necessarily bring it up during the LDP RET campaign. Mm-hmm. Seems like the LDP doesn't want to make this an internal issue the way the DPJ allowed it to happen. And so they'd rather say, in general, most of the LDP is in favor of some kind of constitutional revision, and they don't want to get into an open debate about exactly airing their differences over exactly what the constitutional revision should be during an internal race. But I agree that if Abe is the new prime minister, he's going to make it more of a priority than Koizumi did. And he's, as a member of the new generation, it's a natural thing for him to take up.
I do think, Chris, I would guess that either Fukuda or Abe or Aso would push forward the ball on security policy. And it may come down to a question of whether to go for a practical step. Fukuda, when he was chief cabinet secretary, pushed for a security law that would allow the government to dispatch forces in a crisis in consultation with the Diet, but without a law every time. And I suspect he'd probably consider that part of his agenda. Whereas Abe may be interested in a more sweeping constitutional approach to solving these problems. My guess, I don't know if anyone disagrees, would be either of them would move this at some point. And it's not inconsistent with trying to improve relations with China or Asia. It may even be a necessary balancing act for somebody who's good at balancing.
Let me add one thing: is the fact of Kometo. Yeah. That to maintain the Kometo, very important to survive for LDP, but Kometo is clearly against. That's very difficult things for Abe or anybody.
Good point. Mike? Mike Miyazawa. A couple of days ago, Washington Post reported that the administration is trying to work out a sanctions a program against Iran, financial sanctions. And according to the Post account, the internal memo of Treasury Department singled out two countries as being the potentially very difficult countries to convince, Japan and Italy, because those two countries are heavily dependent upon Iranian oil. And this is outside the framework of the Security Council. The administration is contemplating upon some action by the like-minded nations or coalition of the willing. And Japan has always said it will honor the resolution by the Security Council. Japan has been using the Security Council resolution as rationale to send troops to Iraq and everywhere. Therefore, my question, if the United States officially requests Japan to cooperate and join this effort outside the framework of the UN Security Council resolution. And I think if it happens, it's going to be the very first and serious challenge for the next Prime Minister of Japan. My question is, are they for or against financial sanctions against Iran?
Of course, neither has said clearly the answer to that, so we'd have to ask our panel to speculate whether Abe-san or Fukuda-san would support financial sanctions. Just to clarify, the story is about targeted sanctions against financial assets of Iranians who are trading in WMD or missiles, and not sanctions against Azadegan or oil per se. So it's not quite as bad as it may sound, but nevertheless, it's a big challenge for the next prime minister. I don't know. It would have to be speculation. I don't think either any of them have said what they would do.
The safe prediction is that both of them will try to avoid being put in the position where they are asked this question by trying to make sure the Americans never officially ask them this, put things off as long as possible. But I'll leave it to the others to speculate what either would do if the question was put to them.
My wild speculation is probably some difference between Abe and Fukuda. Fukuda is more likely to the Mr. Mike Miyazawa's the idea, probably a little bit more independent way and seeking some UN way. And the Abe is more close to the US. But of course, the stance is very subtle, and the finally, probably their more reasonable approach to the seeking of both. I think the maintaining a good framework United States and also securing the interest with Iran. Especially the oil issues sounds very critical to Japan. However, I think if in case of sanction, I think that Japan can have alternative. Of course, it may damage to some prices. So it's really up to the situation, how the oil price is a speculation in case of the sanction, and also the domestic opinion. If domestic opinion thinks that Japan is too much following the United States, that's damaging. But if not, probably the easier to make a decision.
Seth Hurwitz. In terms of the reform agenda, pushing that forward, do you see a role for Takinaka in either an Abe or a Fukuda administration? And if not Takinaka, some other high-profile person meant to push maybe unpleasant aspects of reform and reassure investors?
I think the LDP has a rare luxury after this long period of economic crisis of not seeming to need somebody right now to reassure the markets the way they used to. So I think my prediction is that they'll avoid giving Takinaka a major role in the new cabinets, either one, and won't look for anybody, an outsider, to play that role. Instead, they'll try to find some steady hand within the LDP to serve as Minister of Finance and do that and be the main spokesperson for economic policy.
Any disagreement? You agree?
Yeah, I agree. Takinaka is not the only politician who knows about economics. Both Abe and Fukuda have more friends.
Is there anything that we can see about Abe or Fukuda based on who their advisors are and who they seem to be talking to? Fukuda-san's campaign manager is Mr. Eto, who is a pro-Taiwan, pro-defense politician in favor of constitutional reform. So I'm not sure what to conclude from that. But do you see others who are orbiting around Mr. Abe and Mr. Fukuda who would give some more hints
about
economic policy or security policy? Are there advisors or brains? You know, the famous brain emerging for either of them, or do they have their own brains?
as I said earlier, both of them are very picky about their friends, and especially Mr. Fukuda, he is confident with Middle East policies by himself, because he used to work for an oil company for 20 years or so, and in that case, he is confident that he can handle the Middle East and oil issue by himself. But other than that, to me, he trusts Mr. Eto fairly good at this stage. And at the beginning, I doubted if they could get along, because they totally have different views. Mr. Eto is very pro-Taiwan, and when Chief Cabinet Fukuda was the Chief Cabinet Secretary, I didn't think they were that close, but these days they are. Probably they meet each other every day, each other for strategies and everything, and they are very close. So I would say for Fukuda, Eto is very close, and he has a couple of close friends, for example.
Sato?
No.
The old one.
Tanino.
Yeah, Mr. Tanino, Ambassador Tanino, former China, we call him China School Principal. China School no Kochou Sensei, but they get along very well. They are classmates from Azabu. And they are very close friends. And probably, I think, Tanino is giving a good advice on China. And but as far as Abe is concerned, he's still looking for so-called good brain group. And Shiozaki is also trying to help Abe in his economic policies. And but other than that, to me, Fukuda is more far ahead in its campaign preparation, because he was not involved with the government affairs for over a year, and he could concentrate on the preparation, while Abe is very busy with the government, and he is still, I can feel that he's kind of frustrated, because he cannot do everything he wants to do. So with my personal conversation with him, he feels a bit frustrated these days. So he's trying to make a good timetable, but and also looking for very good advisory group.
Let's take one more question, and then we'll let everyone have a concluding answer to that. Let me ask. Yeah, sure.
Dr. Shioka, I just wondered what the role of the of public opinion would be in a in the LDP. Contest. It played a huge role when Koizumi first appeared, but I wonder, you know, what are the expectations of the public, so to speak? Is there disillusionment? Will there be less of a sort of a public swing one way or the other, so that you could really go back to politics of the pre-Koizumi period? Or what exactly, I mean, what difference, in a way, has Koizumi made in terms of moving the public and changing their own perceptions of how a leader is elected?
Is the Koizumi style now a prerequisite, in a way, for the Prime Minister?
Let me start. That's a very good question and a very difficult question. I think as a Koizumi, is the style is his own personality and his experience, and he defeated his potential rival. That's the old LDP style and the Hashimoto faction. And I think as a LDP local member agreed with the Koizumi style. But this time, I think Koizumi established a new one and no old regime to defeat. So probably the very unpredictable how the public opinion would play. Still, we don't know. But I think one thing we really need to make sure is that Japanese public now is a very, how can I say, volatile or easily emotionally led. If some genius manipulate public, the opinion easily could turn. That I mentioned my father's case. That was one case. Of course, he was not so bad, but still we don't know who would be the key person in the LDP.
I guess I'll go next. I think that Koizumi has certainly raised the bar for what the public expects of their leader, and so this is going to make it tough at the next general election for the new leader of the LDP to measure up. I mean, as soon as next summer, when there's the upper house election, the new leader, either Abe or Fukuda, is going to have established some sort of a credentials as a colorful, good debater, good on television kind of a person. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble with Mr. Ozawa in the competition for the upper house election. An interesting thing nobody has commented on is that the last time when there was a race that selected Koizumi, Koizumi had turned out to have broad popularity among the general public, and he was more popular among the unaffiliated voters than among the LDP voters. This time we have a situation where Abe seems to be the more popular person among the general public. But if you look at the public opinion polls, he's always more popular with the LDP voters than with the general public. It turns out that Fukuda does better, despite his lack of charisma, being older and maybe less telegenic, he seems to do better with these unaffiliated voters. So both of them have a disadvantage relative to Koizumi. Abe is going to have to somehow reach out to a broader cross-section than he's appealed to so far. He's appealed mostly to the LDP. He's going to have to really appeal to the unaffiliated voters. That will be a challenge to him. With Fukuda, he starts out with a little bit of an advantage in having the general public more comfortable with him than they are relative to the voting strength with the LDP voters. But he doesn't seem to have the natural talents that maybe Abe does. So I think both are going to have trouble measuring up. And just to throw out a scenario that could really get the LDP into trouble, all the ballots are opened in September. It turns out that Abe was very disproportionately popular among the primary voters, but that the LDP, through some factional manipulations, ended up the Diet members disproportionately supporting Fukuda. And then Fukuda turns out to have made all kinds of old-fashioned deals to make this possible. And he immediately starts to have to pay back some of the people he promised favors to in order to get their support. This could lead, if Fukuda is selected in this way, could really leave him at a disadvantage to measure up in any way to Koizumi's standards.
May I add just a point? I think we have something, we lost something, missed something, only one point about the two candidates' advantages as well as disadvantages. What I'm talking is Maehara Seiji-sano stepping down. And I know his stepping down brought about a sort of atmosphere shift inside DPG, which makes the young generation politicians much more cautious, self-restrained. And given the background that for the young generation within the two parties, LDP and DPJ, there is very closely connected with each other. So such a atmosphere atmosphere shift in DPG also impacted already on the atmosphere inside LDP. So this is sort of advantage for Fukuda-san to win the election.
Well, anyone, either Fukuda or Abe, will have difficulty because Koizumi has such a strong character and no one can beat him. He's a genius in manipulating TV. And so even Abe probably will have difficulty if Abe is elected as the prime minister because Koizumi has such a strong charisma. And I don't think neither Abe or Fukuda have that. So although Abe is now popular among the general public, this time, as I said earlier, the system is changed since the election in April 2001. So the LDP did not want to make... the LDP tried to change the system per se so that no one will be able to get such a sweeping victory, taking all the seats in the local votes as Koizumi did. So,
And it's unlikely that the next prime minister will sing Elvis Presley in summit meetings. the overall dynamics in this election are pretty healthy as these things go. You look at some of the other democracies, including our own around the world, you don't always have actual debates about big policy issues like the future of relations with China or what to do about aging of society. So, you know, I was a graduate student not too long ago, and I was taught that policy is irrelevant in Japanese politics, but it's clearly got some role, and it seems to be a very healthy process for Japan, probably a healthy process for Japan-China relations, certainly for U.S.-Japan. But not all things in Japanese politics are as they appear, so we have prepared a smoke-filled room, and for those who want to stay, we'll continue this discussion informally. It's just on the other side of the barrier there, and I think we have refreshments. And for those who want to stay, please do. We'll continue the conversation informally. But for now, we'll end this session and thank all the speakers. Please join me in thanking them.